I'm just going to call to order the City of Tukwila Finance and Governance Committee meeting. I'm Kate Crowley, the Chair, and my members include Councilmember Hogarty and Councilmember Quinn. We'll begin with business agenda item 1A, an ordinance amending the business conservation tax. Sharon Beck, did I do it right?
Yeah.
Senior Fiscal Coordinator, B&O Tax.
Good, and I'd like to introduce Adam. He's new to the finance group. He is our one FTE that we hired for B&O. He has a strong background. I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about it, but he's come from Bellevue, from Kent, the state, all doing tax work at those entities. And tell him a little bit more about what you've been doing.
Yeah, I've worked for, like Tony said, City of Bellevue, City of Kent, and the state of Washington is where I started with Department of Revenue. So they taught me everything about B&O tax, sales tax, there are other various tax types that they have. And I started in training there and worked my way up to a tax administration manager. And then I decided I wanted to work closer to home because I worked for the City of Kent as an auditor and spent a short amount of time in Bellevue as an audit manager. So my experiences included both kind of the administration side of taxes and the audit side of municipal taxes.
It has been great to have someone with a strong tax background that we can just bounce ideas off of. He can take the lead on stuff, and you'll see some of his work as we go on throughout the year. So, yeah, thanks for that.
Okay.
So this ordinance proposal is essentially to strengthen the business and occupation tax. So the City Council passed the B&O tax that does take effect January 1st of 2024. At the time that the ordinance was adopted, the city adopted all of the mandatory provisions of the model ordinance, which is model ordinance is held by the state of Washington. It dictates how cities need to essentially administer their B&O tax. The City of Tukwila did not adopt any of the optional provisions that are available within the model ordinance. And so these changes are recommended to essentially strengthen our tax by adopting some of the optional provisions that are available. So I'll just go through this list and explain these just a little bit at a high level, and you can let me know if you have any questions. One change is simply a definition change related to printing and publishing newspapers. It's a mandatory change as a result of the change of the model ordinance. It's not going to have any revenue impact, but that is mandatory. Also, part of these changes are adding additional exemptions that we currently do not have in the city code and additional deductions. Now, these exemptions and deductions are not part of the model ordinance. They're not part of the optional provisions of the model ordinance, but they are, the state of Washington has these exemptions and deductions for its state B&O tax, and a lot of our neighboring cities have these exemptions and deductions. So it's just aligning Tukwila with what our neighboring cities are doing. And it is going to benefit some businesses that, they already don't pay B&O tax in other cities on some of their revenue streams or altogether. So this will just bring us in alignment with those other cities. Another change, apart from exemptions and deductions, is creating a non-reporting status. So currently, city code says that everybody needs to file a tax return, regardless of how much money they make. But we also have said that if you don't make at least $750,000 in the city, you don't have to pay. Mm-hmm. So this is going to, the non-reporting status eliminates the administrative burden on us of collecting tax returns when nothing's due, and on the business, so that these smaller businesses don't have to file a return to begin with. So we've already kind of started implementing this. We do have a form that the business can use to request a non-reporting status. We can certainly still, check to make sure they qualify for this reporting status, but it just eliminates a lot of paperwork. on their end and on our end. One of the other changes is to the appeal procedure. So when we adopted, the appeal procedure is, it's mandatory that cities have an appeal procedure if a taxpayer disagrees with a tax bill. But the details around the appeal procedure are left open to the city to decide. What Tukwila did at the time of adopting the tax is we developed the same appeal procedure that we currently have in place for other taxes like utility tax, admissions, gambling. But the details of that are not in alignment with how other cities handle their appeals. These changes related to the appeal procedure essentially bring us into alignment with how other cities handle their appeal process.
Just quickly, for clarifying, they handle it more efficiently?
More efficiently?
More suddenly. Yeah.
Yeah, more efficiently. So this, for example, it specifies what information a business needs to provide in order to appeal. So it'll spell it out for them. It gives them 30 days to appeal rather than 21. Other than that, it also specifies that an appeal essentially can't be used as a form of extended due date, that we penalties and interest still accrue during the process. Any other questions on the appeal? Okay. Other than those, the other changes are all directly from the optional provisions of the model ordinance. I researched 7 other surrounding cities, so Seattle, Renton, Auburn, Shoreline, Perion. All of these other cities that I researched have adopted each and every one of these optional provisions. They essentially just strengthen our ability to administer the tax. One of them is, I can briefly go through the list. I don't want to spend too much of your time on it, but essentially, if there is an appeal and it turns out unfavorable for the business, they can go to court. Also for the city. The city can go to court if we disagree with the hearing examiner. This gives the finance director the authority to publish rules. There are a lot of gray areas within the code, and this will let us clarify things and establish rules and regulations that we can publish on our website. We can enter into agreements with other cities, and that's to make sure that we don't have two cities taxing a business twice on the same money. It specifies, there's some things that help us to with enforcement, such as specifying that we'll send tax notices by mail. And so it's the business responsibility to keep their mailing address current. Specifying that businesses have to comply with a B&O tax, that it could result in a business license revocation if they do not comply with the B&O tax. One of the changes involves confidentiality of tax information. So right now, tax information is not confidential and it's open for public records requests. This is going to make sure that businesses, if anybody other than the business requests tax information, we will not disclose it. So keep it protected. And then finally, it allows us to enter in a closing agreement with a taxpayer if there's just an issue where the outcome's uncertain and we might want to avoid litigation. And then also the authority to just charge off uncollectible amounts if we've tried collecting and don't do and they can't collect it. Lastly, and now this is not part of the code changes in this ordinance, but just the point of clarification. So when I joined the city, I came on board, I initially worked on updating the city's website to add more information about the B&O tax. And something that I noticed that had been published was that the B&O tax only applies to businesses with a physical location inside of city limits. That businesses do need to have a physical presence in the city to be subject to tax, but it's not limited to an actual physical business location. So I added that here just as a point of clarification for City Council. It's that provision is mandatory, so we wouldn't even have the option to just apply it to those businesses with a location here. And the financial impact, I took a look at, it's really hard to say. Some of these exemptions and deductions are going to benefit taxpayers. They might result in a lower tax revenue for us. But many of the exemptions and deductions, they only apply to individual income streams, not the business as a whole. And we just don't have that information. So I couldn't really determine what the financial impact would be. On the flip side of that, of course, compared to earlier estimates, we might not have included businesses outside of the city. They are getting notices now that they need to file. So that will result in some additional revenue, but I couldn't really determine the actual financial impact because we don't have great data on how much money these companies are making in the city. So my recommendation is to bring these code changes the council meeting on November 27th. And I'm wondering if you have any questions for me.
Questions, Councilmember Hogarth.
So I had things that were marked and you've answered most of them, but I want a little bit more detail about the examples of out-of-city businesses that may be liable for the tax. First of all, they'd have to be doing $750,000 of business before they would even have to.
That's correct. Yeah.
And so could you have an example of what that might be? You had sales reps in the city, but they'd be having to sell $750,000 of product.
They would.
Performing construction, that might come to three. That could be delivering goods in company-owned vehicles. Is that like Amazon or something?
That would be like Amazon. Looking through our sales tax reports, like for example, I've noticed there's some companies, they don't have a location here, but they make above the $750,000 in sales in the city. And so if they are just delivering goods through common carrier, we actually wouldn't be able to apply the tax. But if they're coming in with their own trucks, then they would be liable for the B&O tax.
There's no, that won't be double taxing them anyplace else. There won't be any other city that's enforcing that B&O tax and us doing that, or is that where you're going to do the coordination?
Yeah, that's correct. Because of the model ordinance, it for sales of goods, it dictates that the tax is due where the goods are delivered. So this company that's coming in their trucks, the other city would have no authority to tax their sales that are delivered into Kelowna.
So they won't be
sold. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Councilor
Friend.
Well, that was one of my questions. The other question is just more of, so this may be a restate, because you said it makes the tax stronger, and I think that's a description that would apply, but it provides clarity, predictability, and alignment with other jurisdictions. So my question was about some of these definitions, could we cross-reference to make sure we are calling the things the same things that other, I guess, like-minded fields are, so that there isn't any confusion
about
intent and what's covered?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I put these together, I had the model ordinance up as well as the other cities' codes. So I went through and I made sure that the language here matches what the other cities have.
Good. Thank you. That's the question there.
Okay.
Okay. Other questions are, this goes into effect next year, but there are people already, I think, formulating if they haven't already submitted applications for exemptions now, and we're about to change the rules right under their feet.
Correct.
What happens?
Correct. Well, right now, I've only heard from a couple of our labor unions that are in the city that got a notice and pointed out they don't pay tax anywhere else. So I let them know I'm working on this. Hang tight, I'll get in touch with you. Of course, there are a lot of other businesses that have already gotten the notice that they're going to need a file along with a link to our website. I think probably if I was thinking I would add some information to the taxes page on our website to announce that we've passed an ordinance and added additional exemptions and deductions, I think that would suffice. We'll be sending another notice out to folks prior to the due date with another reminder that they need to file. So I think if we just put the announcement online now and then get in touch with the folks who have specifically asked about it, I think that'll be sufficient to educate folks.
So do you plan to communicate with all the companies or just the ones who have applied?
Our communication to date is essentially we've prepared a flyer and we're really pointing them to our website, which is where most of the information is. So I'm going to add basically an update with like a news and announcements. We've passed this ordinance. And for those folks that already got the notice, they will get a second notice next year prior to the due date. And we could actually in that notice build something in that we've added this additional ordinance and to give them a heads up.
So if you have a business and your residence or your business office is in Tukwila and you do all your businesses and deliveries and everything else elsewhere, is that when you're going to have a chance to talk to other cities to figure out who actually gets sent through the B&O tax, or are you saying they just they have presence here and therefore the tax?
Sorry, I'm not sure I understand. Don't quite understand the question. But I'll rephrase. So there's a company here, hypothetical example, that they have their location here, but they're not making any sales in Tukwila. It's all outside of Tukwila.
Yeah, construction company. They work on location everywhere.
Yes. Okay. So if they're in Tukwila, everybody with a business license is getting a notice, and it's giving them the website where we have some additional resources like a B&O tax guide, a B&O tax FAQ. We're really expecting the businesses, if they don't already have the tax knowledge, to go to our website and understand what their tax reporting responsibility is. So everybody with a business license is getting that notice. We've been mailing them out since the beginning of October, and that's going to continue over the next couple months.
Okay. If you are outside of Tukwila and you have a delivery truck and it delivers things inside of Tukwila, many of us are aware, I hope you are, that our zip codes are not considered Tukwila, they're considered by the federal government to be Seattle. How do we sort that out?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're hoping that if a business is delivering goods in its trucks here, that they will be knowledgeable, have enough knowledge to know that they need to get a city business license. On the webpage, I did add some links to our Tukwila IMAPs, as well as DOR's sales tax rate lookup tool, so that you can type in an address and it'll give you the correct city. Mm-hmm. So hopefully businesses are using that, but going through our sales tax reports, I am aware that it looks to be that there are companies who are doing business here and don't have a license. And unfortunately, in those scenarios, it's kind of, we try to educate them as we can, as we find them. But we don't know what we don't know.
Okay. I have another question.
Yeah.
But it's on the same kind of level.
Okay.
And don't feel like it's life and death. But the financial impact answer, while I want to cut you loose on it, it feels really, really vague. Do you know or don't you know whether we'll make more money or less money as a result of these options? Would be a really good answer to have just on a rising tide of boats. this is math. So yeah, you know, there's a way to calculate the at least probabilities.
Do you know, Tony, if initially in the budget that was developed, if we included out of city businesses?
I do know that we did not include that. And so the reason why I think Adam is kind of pausing through this is that the data that we're getting comes from the state, DOR, and that is based on businesses, what they implement, upload. So we're not 100% on the accuracy of that. As we've tried to look at the same data from a few different points, and I like to look at things three to four different ways, triangulate this, we're finding different answers. So we're not 100% on the confidence of that. So that's why he's not saying anything now. But at a high level, what we prepared before did not include out of state. So the general answer is this will bring in more money because we're bringing in more businesses that we did not include before. The good news is it will probably be offset because we're adding more deductions and exemptions. And as to ensure there's not that double taxation, cities will have, or businesses will have, other deduction options. So hopefully it just evens out.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we compared with 5 other cities. We didn't do a broader comparison because I didn't hear you say Seattle, for instance.
Well, I did, compared to,
sorry,
Seven other cities. I did include Seattle.
Okay.
Yeah, and not every city of those seven, they've all adopted the optional provisions of the model ordinance. Not all of them have adopted each of these exemptions and deductions. I looked at, out of those seven, did the majority of the ones I looked at adopt this deduction or exemption, and does the state have this deduction or exemption?
Okay.
I could, for example, one of the exemptions is exempting credit unions. Now, I could, based on how we calculated our estimates, I could possibly go through and calculate, okay, how much is this going to take off of our revenues from credit unions. But overall, many of these are just individual revenue streams. They don't apply to the company as a whole, and we don't have that data to calculate that to begin with.
Right. And I don't mind the concept of this general common sense that credit unions are let off of this, but on the other hand, we have the headquarters of one of the biggest ones in the state.
Yeah.
So that's another math calculation we might want to do. Are there the cities that don't give them an exemption?
Yeah, from the cities I researched,
like if Olympia does it, they're probably taking care of WSE, right? Credit union.
Yeah.
The big ones are they letting them off of it or not?
Yeah, Auburn, Renton, Kent, and Seattle all have an exemption for credit unions. So,
but none of them have a credit union headquarters like we do.
They don't. Now, one other thing, too, is that while, like Tony mentioned, the data we have on how much revenue the companies are earning, it simply comes from, on the business license application, there's a field that asks, how much money will you be earning in the city in the next 12 months? It's just an estimate. There's no consequence to it. So a lot of folks guesstimate. And if BSU, for example, whatever number they put down, when it comes to determining how much tax is due, there's a complex calculation method based on ratios of deposits from Tequila customers versus company-wide deposits.
Mm-hmm.
So that number they put on there really is not a real indicator of that would actually be their taxable revenue if they did owe B&O tax. So it's just one of those things where we don't really have the data. Unless we ask them to file a tax return.
It's just, I would think that you'd ask Spokane and Olympia and places where the headquarters are for their credit unions. Do they follow the same exemption? And if the answer is no, I would question why we would follow what cities who don't have the headquarters for a major statewide credit union are doing. That's my comment. This is just like that ought to be a tweak.
Okay.
You know, I know you've worked really hard and got this perfect, but it literally, our spot check doesn't really include the cities that are the headquarters of these credit unions, and they tend to trend the other way. It might be worth benchmarking and asking how come we're going in a direction that other cities who don't are going, like the main ones are different. Or maybe they'll all do the same, and that'll be great. Okay. So it's like a quick check to do.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, it includes federal credit unions, which I do think Seattle has. If I remember correctly.
Yeah. And Seattle does have this exemption. And
let's just look into it.
Yeah.
That's just what
yeah, we'll look into
the
that.
One, you know, let's be smart with our money kind of
sure.
thing. Council members have any more questions or comments? All petitions. Okay. This is going for consensus to forward to the 1127 COW and the December 4th regular meeting. Are you good for that?
Sure.
All right, we're done. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Moving on to business agenda 1B, approval of 1.25 full-time employee FTE for the Tukwila Municipal Court for supporting the automated traffic safety camera program. Trish Kinlow, our judicial branch administrator, is going to take it from there.
Thank you very much. The municipal court is coming before you to request your support for funding an additional 1.25 FTEs. It has been brought to our attention, and it's our understanding that the city council approved for an additional 4 cameras going at 2 different locations, another one near Foster and then one near Thorndike Elementary School. And so in order to support that, we need to have staffing. One of the things is when this was brought to my attention initially, I was asking how many cameras were going to be placed in those locations. But what I kept getting told is 2, because it's 2 locations, when it's actually 4 cameras, and the cameras are what generate the citations. And so I reached out to the vendor and to get their preliminary findings, and I received their numbers based on their analysis. So for the additional camera at Foster High School, it varies. So they project that the first month that they start the program, it'll be about 818 tickets per month, and then dwindle back down like it usually does to like 400 tickets a month. For Thorndike Elementary, they estimate 1,200 tickets the first month, and then dwindle down to about 600 tickets the final month. So taking those numbers, I actually, just based on my experience, have a feeling that it's probably going to be a little less than that. And so I'm going with the lower last month numbers in order to support the staffing needs of the court. If I went by the higher numbers, we'd be asking for a lot more people. We don't have to request a lot of staff, additional staff, because we've implemented a lot of technology and streamlined a lot of processes. But we've done that to the extent that we can do it. We still have to have a human factor in order to support this program. And so what we anticipate doing is we would hire one additional FTE, and then we would take one of our part-time positions and bump it from 3/4 time to full time. And so I'm requesting your support to do that. While I understand it's the city's position that the executive branch would prefer that we wait until the cameras are operational, we don't want to do that. We did that the last time, and it was painful, because what you have to understand is that we have to get people trained on the legalities, the court rules, and our court processes before they can even start doing the job. When we did that the last time, that meant that we were trying to train new people on new systems and keep the program operational, and we just can't afford to do that again. And so at the request of my leadership team, we are coming before you to request support for funding 1.25 FTEs.
Questions, comments, Councilmember Quinn?
So what you're asking for is kind of 50% per person, right? Based on what you have, right, at 0.75, To 1.25?
Correct.
I don't think that that is a significant ask based on the additional implementation pieces. It's actually pretty modest. So,
that's all it was.
Yeah. All right. That's the only question I have.
Councilmember Hugerty.
Okay, now I'm trying to figure this out. So you're going to one point, you're asking for an additional 1.25 or an additional?
So I'm asking for one additional full-time employee.
So that's one.
And take the current three-quarter time employee that we have and bump them from 0.75 to one whole.
Okay, that's what I thought. So salaries will be one, new salaries 1.25.
Yes.
So when are those cameras going to go in? Does anybody know, or is there a...
So I know that they're in the permitting process right now, okay. Right? And it's an estimate that I received that is probably going to be the end of first quarter, which gives us plenty of time to get the new staff properly trained and ready to go the minute the first citation gets issued.
Okay. So March, are they going to do the... months of warnings too. So this is not subject to the same rules as the cameras that the state legislature said where they're going to take 0.5 of half of the income, right? This is
in 2025. There is going to be a change, and they will start
taking half of the income
taking,
from
taking part
two.
Of the yes, mm-hmm. taking part of the income. Yes.
So are we still being able to cover our expenses, or is this going to like have to come out of the general fund then? Are we still making enough that we'll be able to cover the staffing expenses?
And that will be a question for finance to project that on the revenue side. What doesn't do the revenue?
So there you go.
Yes. And I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
Yeah, we don't have the data to make that prediction. So until we get the cameras installed and we see the traffic tickets coming in and how many are paying, We can't say that we have enough revenue to cover the positions.
Okay. So here's the thing. We've got 4 months of no revenue, but we have 1 year still of 100% collecting the income. Okay. That's good. That's a good thing because that way that'll help with that. And so then after that, we'll just have to deal with it, right? With the 0.5. So yeah. Okay.
I guess,
yeah. I do love that we'll have documentation, too.
Yes.
Because we can go to the legislature. It's pretty heavy hand. And if we can demonstrate true application and costs, I think we can make the case.
I think
it's a blunt instrument right now.
So I'm just going to say, we started by saying they, so when he's mentioning legislature, the state of Washington has legislation that will invite themselves to take a reach in and pull half of what our revenues are from these traffic cameras in about a year. So with that, you look at me like you have a question.
I do. Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that for anybody who's watching the video.
I just wanted to say that that's really a good point. So if what happens is we get the two sets of cameras, which equals four, right? You know, they're going both ways. And then and after all this comes down, we're getting 0.5 revenue. If it's not covering our costs, I do think it would be really good to go back to the state legislature and say, you're sort of hamstringing us when it comes to safety by making us pay for these safety things because you're taking half of this revenue. So, and this is just conversation.
And Vicki and I have been watching, how this is going, and I believe that the language is they want half of after your expenses. So
net. Oh, well, that's it. That is a big difference.
The still.
Oh,
the still. The half of the profit.
Correct.
That's
right. So you don't have that reserve, right, you know, so, right.
That's used to pay for these. So the costs that you're talking about, the cost of the equipment and the license and all that, but...
It just says the expense for the program.
Right. So does that mean the employees?
Well, it's an expense.
Yeah.
That's the way I read it. But.
Well, especially if we have this on record, well, you say we want an FTE to do that, mm-hmm. then we have that on record that is allocated as an expense. So hopefully that would work.
I'm hoping that we'll get clarification on whether or not.
We can have additional meeting. We can have additional information by the time this comes to the full council.
I think that.
Because, yeah, we don't have the data at this point. It's not even in the budget amendments.
Yeah. Other than that, you guys had your questions? You're asking for just under $200,000, which is not a lot considering the load that has to be done, no matter what. The last thing you want is a backlog, because then they'll start falling off or not swift up to justice, frankly. What they call it, speed of trial.
Well, it's important for me that you understand the court wouldn't be here if we didn't need it. Mm-hmm. If we could postpone it, we would. We learned a hard lesson the last
time. Oh, yeah.
And we, you know, we push through things and we just keep, you know, plugging along. We don't go announcing to everybody, oh my God, we're struggling.
Mm-hmm.
We just do what we need to do to survive. We just cannot absorb that on top of all the blade processing that we have to do. And the city has a phenomenal prosecutor, and so our caseload is increasing.
You guys are tiny but mighty, but this is a stretch beyond. I watched the sheriff's ad, body worn cameras and in-car videos, and it's overwhelming there. Public disclosure. So, the only other question I have is, what if we do come up short financially? So are you going to get that all ironed out in the finance department if this comes before us and everybody goes,
we can take a look at our current revenues and expenses, but to predict the future and when those cameras are going to actually come online and when we'll start seeing those revenues, because the cameras do come on, say, in March. We don't start receiving revenue in March. It's delayed. So we'll have to go look at the cash flow for that. So we'll do some research and bring some information forward for when this goes to the full council.
Okay, good. Because I'm thinking it's going to, if it does come in, that whenever it comes in, let's say it was March, and you get rolling because you don't actually know what it's going to be like, because this is behavior modification over time. And that gets into place and come up with lower numbers than you were expecting, even though you took the conservative route on what it was you were going to spend. You got to have, it'd be nice if council knew what plan B was. Like, just cut it off.
Yeah, I mean, plan B could be like, we rethink it because we moved from a few more. And so I think that's a real option that you stand in those cameras. But think about the connection between that and what exists now. Part of it is to also address folks that are going around the camera. So, I mean, I think that'll be informative. And if we have to cut, it's revenue back. And if we have to cut, like, that's the job, is to look at, hey, this is not a viable option. Especially since we expanded.
Okay, but hypothetically, this is like, so there's the safety part of it. So if it really truly is enhancing safety, then we throw that in too with the revenue back and say, where's our priorities? And I'm just saying this is like big picture thinking. And so there
you go. Absolutely. But
yep, there you go.
Money doesn't grow on trees.
No.
So.
No. So, that is just
the conference. It's been a while since we've had them describe what the contract says, but there is some kind of a deal where if it starts to get to the point where behavior modification is achieved, which is a goal, that you can just shut off the license, and I don't know if they pack up their stuff and go or what they do, but it's built so that these localities don't go under. And in terms of legislation, it seems like an advocacy might be to go talk to legislators now about a floor, saying that a city of, you know, 30,000 or less can make this much money before we start playing games with 50% of that. Because you can't even get to a certain level. What are they taking half of? You know, just quarters in the cap, which seems like a dumb idea. So, of course, I'm a municipal person. Any other questions, comments? Anybody have any problem with moving this forward to the 11:20 regular meeting? And it says the regular meeting, not the consent, right?
You're right.
Okay. So then
right, so we go for discussion.
Okay. We all head nodded, so well done. It's good to see you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. And whoever else is up there?
Valerie.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
Glad you were here. Business agenda item 1C is the September General Fund Expenditure Update. Maybe you look for these.
Okay.
So take it away, Tony Fulton, our Deputy Finance Director.
Thank you.
I expect this one to be quick. There's nothing new in here, but let me just get right through it. So as of the end of September, the general fund expenditures are coming in as budgeted. The general fund departments are operating within their allocated budgets, and all the overages have been identified and explained. So starting out with the allocated budget, all departments except for administrative services and fire are operating within their allocated budget. The overage in administrative services, as we've mentioned before, the private LTE project that is reimbursed by the state, it's a grant, and then fire, overtime, increased call volumes with dispatch, so it's a little bit higher than our contract in services, so those are the increases, and we've seen that for the last few months. That's it over there. Moving to percent expended, we're looking at 75% of the year, and as we just discussed, that the administrative services and fire are the only two. That starts to make sense because now that we're getting at the end of the year, the allocated budget should be lining up with the percent expended. So it makes sense that those two are in line with each other. Jumping over to the change 2023 compared to 2022, administrative services, again, the Chromebook laptop purchases from the grant. Community development has been seeing an increase over the prior year, but the department is currently under their allocated budget and their percent expended. But I did look at it anyway, and it's due to an increase in professional services. So we're talking about things like the middle housing project and the Reed Middleton contracts, professional services they've worked on. But again, they were budgeted for within allocation, so nothing there. Police, they are significantly under their allocated budget and finished the month at 66% of the year at 75%. So the increases, we have seen those before. They're not as big as you think $1.75 million would lead you to believe, but it's overtime, it's supplies, it's services. The salary overtime is due to limited staffing. We talked about some of the supplies before, firearms, instructor, school, revolver supplies, that sort of thing. So the same thing. Their tech services is a contract between the city and Axon Enterprises. And going on to fire, we've talked about that already, it's the contract. General fund by category. Last part. We are looking at, when I start with the allocated budget, it is only machinery and expenses that is higher than their total allocated budget. And so when we look at the machinery equipment, it's TIS, and they have it's a single invoice for $1.1 million. It's the Kara Schoff Technology Corp. Anyways, back to their grants, it's the 4G turnkey private wireless network that they're putting in there. Moving over to percent expended, services and capital outlay are the only two that are above 75%. Utilities, within there, I look at utilities, they're reported at 87%, but they are under their allocated budget and within prior year's spending. So they're in line with prior year, so I don't think there's much going on there. The repairs and maintenance services is slightly above percent expended, but well below the prior year's spending. So again, nothing, I feel like it's just the increased cost that they have been allocated that they knew were coming budgeted before. However, PD and Public Works, they make up the lion's share of the repair and the maintenance. And PD is their radio telemetry maintenance, and the increase in Public Works is non-capital improvements, and that is specifically the underground installation paid to the City of Seattle. The machinery equipment, we talked about that, the 4G turnkey already. So now on to the change between 2022 and 2023. Looks like there's several of them, but they're all within the total services. The professional services, it's the RFA contract. Back in the day, that was reported up in salaries. We've seen that before. The professional development is below the allocated budget and below the percent expended. It's just a higher amount as compared to the prior year as a result of a return to in-service trainings and seminars. Rentals are up over the prior year, but below allocated budget and as well as the percent to expended. So it's just an increase in costs over the year. Technology services is with the PD software maintenance and agreement contract with the vendor Spillman. And then machinery and equipment, again, 4G turnkey private wireless network infrastructure. So nothing new to see. We're just marching along through the year. We're at 3/4 of the year. And I know we're going to talk about budget amendments and council, but the departments are really doing a good job individually holding to their budget. So I believe it is turning out to be a successful year, 3/4 into it. With coming out of the pandemic, things are starting to return to normal, but the directors have done a good job, in my opinion.
Council members, questions and comments?
Yeah. The one thing I do want to point out, if it's okay, it's not reflected in these reports, but I just don't want to lose sight of the fact that we do have the emergency declaration for the Riverton Methodist Church. That is going to have some cost to the city, and this is at the end of the year. So you don't see this included in the budget amendments because we don't know what that dollar amount is going to be. That's the one wild card. And then, of course, we're coming into wintertime, so if we have a snow event, those oddities that might pop up at the end of the year. So just
as of now, that Riverton Park, we're about 15,000 for some fencing. It's mostly in salaries right now, about 400,000. So it is going to be higher, but that's what we have so far coming in. We don't know about the snowfall, but I appreciate Director Carlson bringing that up. That I
didn't bring it up. That. There won't be any.
Yeah.
Council Member Hogarty, questions?
No questions. Thank you. Good job. And thanks for letting us know about the uncertainties at the end of the year.
Councilmember Krim, I think I heard.
Yeah, no questions.
Okay. On my end, I'm going to follow up. Is there going to be a certain amount that you're going to ask on the amended that you know of now, like 15K? Or are you going to wait until there's a total sum and do it in 24?
So I thought long and hard about this. Any amount we put in a budget amendment is going to be wrong because we just don't know. This is a moving target. We could bring something forward, but again, it's going to be wrong. And when we adopt the budget, we adopt it at the fund level, not the department level. And so what the plan is I think we're going to capture a lot of these costs in Department 20, so we can clearly isolate them and say, this is how much we spent on it. But we don't legally have to do a budget amendment for it. And so my preference would be let it pass for 2023. We get a better handle on it. And if we need to amend the budget in 2024, we do it then. Venus, just again, we put in, it would literally be pulling a number out of there. We'll put it in, it'll be wrong.
Right.
So I think we just call attention to the expenditures. We track them. We're very transparent to say, here's how much we're spending on it. But we don't legally need to do an official budget amendment on it.
Okay. And then,
But I will say, as we start seeing those costs come through, we can make sure we start talking about them in the reports. There was nothing in September, but when they start hitting this month, you'll start seeing them. We can definitely call attention to them just for transparency and clarity, because we don't want to hide them, but we want to call attention to them. But I wouldn't know what to put in for a budget amendment.
So there's a couple, three things that could happen. One, this could just be salaries. Two, this could be money we outlay, and then suddenly the federal government or state government comes through.
And we get reimbursed for, and that's the other piece. We don't know how much is going to be reimbursed from other agencies.
Right. And I don't know if... did you forward or not forward the information? Adam Smith's office sent a note to, I don't know what the answer was from the mayor.
I haven't done anything with it.
The group, the government group, which I'm on, that's been meeting and concerned themselves with the asylum emergency situation. Smith and Murray's office combined communicated that they're asking for some funding at the federal level. I think it was 7 total signing the letter saying that, so they're trying to make some moves to see if they could pull out some earmarked money somewhere and get some money flowing in this direction, whether it goes straight to Tukwila or it solves for a building where people can be housed in a better refugee center situation. We don't know. So that's why it makes sense to kind of wait, see what the impacts are. What does that look like in terms of a balanced budget? You still have to pay bills.
We do. And again, we adopt the legal level is the fund level. So as long as we don't exceed the fund level in total, and we do have savings in the police department, we have savings in other departments. So I believe we will come in. We also need to meet our fund balance policy. And right now we will meet that policy. So I think it's more just a transparency issue than an accounting issue.
Good. Then on all these other runs that are 3 months from the end of the year, the matching patterns of other years, or they're underrunning those patterns, and we can expect that based on the ebb and flow of allocations that they will actually fulfill and use up their funds?
Yeah. So the big thing that's missing right now is we have one contract that's still being negotiated that expired the end of last year. So once that is settled, though we retro back to January 1st, those would be included. So that will catch the salaries and benefits up to closer to budget.
Okay.
And I don't know what the status of that contract is. So if for some reason it doesn't settle until next year, which I don't foresee that happening, we would still make a high-level estimate and accrue back to 2023, so most of it is reflected in this year.
Okay. And how many more finance meetings do we have left, Laurel?
Maybe one.
Okay.
This one?
There could be two.
I thought two, the second one in November and then December 12th. December 11th, there weren't any tentative items lined up, but potentially two. One or two.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to know. Anybody have any other questions or anything for the good of the order or Ms. Wyman? This meeting is then hereby concluded. Thanks.